Great. Good morning. This is English 480, and today my group and I will be talking about accessibility, disability, and digital divides as it relates to the digital humanities. I'm Sabrina Zirkel, and I'd love if the rest of the people here could introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Emma.
I'm Natalie.
And I'm Alex.
I just wanted to start us off with a really quick icebreaker question. If you could have a free trip for spring break, totally paid for, where would you want to go?
Paris?
I would go to probably New Zealand.
New Zealand, yeah. Lord of the Rings, okay.
Yeah, of course.
I would probably go to Hawaii.
Hawaii, that would be nice. I think I would want to go to England just because I'm a British literature nerd, but I think we all know that. All right, so to start us off, I have a quote from a TED Talk by Jeff Pardee Jr. He is a MS survivor and disability activist.
Realize that you're not limited by a disability, only by your access and finances, which is why we need companies to invest in marketing and developing new accessible technologies.
All right, so just to encapsulate from that, Jeff was saying, you aren't limited by a disability, only by your access and finances. What do you all think of his statement? What do you agree with or disagree with about that?
I think I would definitely agree with it, because having accessible like areas and stuff, it is kind of about finance and being in a proper area, but like, besides that, there isn't really a limit with a disability. It's just about how, like, you can adapt to it, really.
Yeah, I think it's more about the limit that your circumstances are giving you rather than the limits that are placed by a disability, I would think.
And I liked what Emma said about adaptability. Okay, sorry about my voice. This is going to be great. That we've seen all these, like, stories of people who, like, lose all their legs, like quadriplegics doing things. So I think it is a lot about what you have access to, kind of essentially if you're born in a place where you have this access, or you're born into a family that has these finances that can help you get to places you want to be. I think that's pretty telling about how you can move forward.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so shifting gears a little bit, I wanted to bring up the topic of universal design. Universal design is something that has been in our class textbook. There's by the chapter by George H. Williams. And just briefly, I would describe universal design as kind of a one-size-fits-all utilitarian approach to design. It has a lot of basis on making things simple, clean, easy to read, and the goal of that is to make something that's best for everybody with the hope that it's also going to be beneficial to people with disabilities. It's a little bit different, I would say, than something like inclusive design, where it's kind of a more specifically tailored or made for a specific person's circumstances. So just based on that and based on your own thoughts and research, What do you think that universal design is the answer to bridging digital divides? And what are the strengths and weaknesses of this approach?
Well, I would say the strengths of universal design is more just the idea that a universal design could exist. Because, like, if there was, like, an easy way to approach everything, then, of course, that would be the ideal situation. But in reality, that's probably not possible at the time. I'd say the weaknesses probably are just that like, it's just, especially with disabilities, there's so many different circumstances, different disabilities, like how are people like struggling with them, et cetera, et cetera. So there isn't really a way to like tackle each one together. You more just have to like improve the circumstances of each one individually until you can find a universal solution.
Yeah, I think it's pretty idealistic to try and consider like covering every issue, like rural living or like financial issues that are placing limits on someone. But it is better than doing nothing, but it's pretty like, it's a very optimistic view, so it's better than no solution at all.
Yeah, I think before you have this universal design, you have to tackle a lot of underlying systemic issues that contribute, like we were talking about, like access and finances, before you can get to this place where, like, everybody can make use of this one thing equally and something that works, which I honestly don't think there's ever going to be a universal design for anything, really, because everybody's different, every circumstance is different, and I don't see that ever changing, really. You might be able to make something good enough for a large proportion of the of society, but I don't think universal is really achievable.
I feel like that there could be cases where something that's beneficial for one person could be actively detrimental to another, so then there wouldn't really be one kind of solution that would work for both if what they need is completely different from each other. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think I'm going to hand it off to Emma now.
Okay, so a quote that I have from an introduction to a TED Talk is, "Getting online can give people access to science, technology, and the world of ideas. Over a billion people in the world have some kind of disability, but we're still putting barriers in front of them in the online world." And this is from a TED Talk called Creating an Accessible Digital Future. So when I was thinking of this and how we're talking about barriers in the online world, it got me thinking about the digital divide. And I wanted to see how, like, you guys compare digital divide to accessibility. How are they similar and how are they different? And then I'm going to, like, kind of drop a infographic that may change your mind about your opinion.
I think digital divides and accessibility kind of almost fit into each other. Like, they're not the same thing, but you can, I don't know, merge them almost. I think digital divides is almost under the umbrella of accessibility. Do with that what you will, but...
I think it was really interesting, based on some of the facts that you provided us, that it said about 54% of households with a disability use the internet versus households with no disability are much higher. I would think that somebody who's experiencing disability would need the internet even more for tasks such as, like, ordering groceries or just other kind of day-to-day tasks that would be easier with technology. So it was really interesting to see the parallels between about like the digital divide with the technology, but like with the disability there.
Yeah, and especially like I'm looking at these percentages that I provided, and like if you look at the 54% versus the 81% of people who don't have disabilities in the U.S. that have tech in the internet, it's just it's a bit surprising.
I think it a little bit makes sense that number would be a lot lower for people with disabilities because they tend to have other things to worry about than what's going on Twitter or like some YouTube video. So I don't think that's the most outlandish thing in the world because they're more focused on trying to live in the real world than online
sometimes. But I would
argue
that those kind of things would help them have a better, be more beneficial to have them have a better experience or be able to complete more tasks.
Yeah, I would be curious to know like a little bit more about what that percentage actually means about using the internet in what context rather than just as a whole, like what that 54% means.
Yeah, I thought that the 54% was kind of surprising because it shows like a lot less reliance for people with a disability when you would think it'd be much more beneficial to someone in that situation. So it's kind of odd to see that disparity.
Yeah, and about the differences and similarities between digital divide and accessibility, ADAinfo.org just released a new article like a few years ago that says accessibility is now a new version of the digital divide. So Alex, you were kind of right in the fact that like they're kind of umbrellas of each other. And how accessibility is now going to be under, is it just a different type of digital, like, is it just a different way to, it just considered to be almost like a barrier, like how the TED Talk expressed it.
What does ADA stand for?
ADA stands for... ADA stands for, I think it's just the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Okay, cool. Just wanted to check them.
And also, one more question about it is, we kind of discussed, but we didn't go more into it. So why do you think there is a digital divide with people with disabilities?
Probably has to do with finances. A lot of times healthcare is expensive, especially for like disabilities like wheelchairs. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anything really. So there's probably more spin on that than trying to get like an iPad or something.
Okay. I'm gonna pass the mic over to you, Alex.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm gonna start with a quote from a study by Michelle Noble. It's kind of comparing like low SES to like high SES, like kind of like what they have in their like environment. SES is socioeconomic status. It's like schools with on the opposite ends of the spectrum. So it says, placing computers and internet connections in low SES schools in and of itself does little to address the serious educational challenges faced by these schools. So any thoughts on that? And yeah, for now.
It's kind of like the universal design perspective a little bit, like thinking that giving everyone a laptop is going to solve a problem when, I mean, somebody could go home and then not have internet, so it really solves nothing. But it is better than doing nothing.
Yeah, going off what Natalie said, there's a 2018 study by the Pew Research Center that says about 1 in 5 teens can't finish their homework because they don't have internet access at home. And so I think that really matters a lot in terms of economic mobility, having the chance at higher education. And I think also if you're in a lower socioeconomic school, the teachers themselves, I mean, you barely have enough money for textbooks, so they may not have enough money to give teachers the training that they would need to clearly and efficiently explain how to use these kind of technologies to students.
Yeah, that's very true. If teachers can't do it, like, teach them appropriately or learn in this, like, more digitized world, then it doesn't really do anything for the students to just sit there with a laptop, kind of just playing around and actually using them to do what they can potentially do.
Yeah, and also we've mentioned in this class earlier about how schools are often a place where you learn something but you're also supposed to apply it at home. And if these homes don't have internet access or computer access, then like these skills can be a little bit pointless. Like they're not being properly applied until you might really, really need it. And also now like homework is almost all on the internet. So just kind of a follow-up question to this is, I'm curious about how do you think this is going to affect the future as like internet or as homework and like school is becoming more digital, but like areas are still in that digital divide?
I don't know.
That's a good question.
That's a great question, and I just don't have an answer. So going back to the school thing a little bit, like now that we're in college, we kind of have access to like, we get like not free access to like New York Times or whatever, but like Adobe Suite, like all of that. Like we can get it, or we can get CCI laptops for free.
A
Drew
is on most places on campus most of the time.
Yeah. That. So it's kind of interesting that like now that we've gotten to this point, we kind of gain accessibility almost as a, like a default. So it's interesting to see that, especially I know a lot of people in high school who like never thought that college was like attainable for them, and they kind of lived through high school thinking like, oh, I'm not gonna be able to get there anyways, so they just kind of quit and they kind of never got a chance to use or get to know like all these digital things, which is very interesting to me.
to an argument that we need to be starting these kind of measures earlier in education than just in college.
Yeah. Or especially with like lower SES schools. Like my high school is very like, you had literally mansions on one side of it, and if you walked out the back, it was quite literally the ghetto. So, which is very interesting for, like, especially administration. Like, they didn't trust, like, anything. They didn't want to put anything in the school because they were like, oh, there's been gang violence on campus every year pretty much. Like, so there's kind of this distrust almost in introducing technology into lower SES areas because they just assume it's going to be misused or stolen or something like that.
That's interesting. So it's not just a financial barrier. It's also a psychological and interpersonal one as well.
Yeah. We can also have this question written down, but we know that digital divide goes deeper than simply giving out computers to underprivileged kids. What else could be done instead of just handing out computers and calling it a day? It's a big question, but...
Like, depending on funding, maybe there could be organizations that help put internet in people's homes so that everyone does have that access. Like, I know that's a long shot, but, like...
I could be wrong. Are they making, like, smart cities or something where, like, there's, like, just Wi-Fi everywhere? I don't know. They should. That would
I
be
remember
kind of
there
fun.
Being some people being excited about like Google Fiber a couple of years ago. I know 5G is also coming, so who knows?
I love 5G.
This goes a little bit more into the digital literacy side, but mm-hmm. I know for in terms of maybe digital divides or just even educational purposes about technology, I think if I had known more about what computers would be capable of, I think I would have been more interested and more willing to go after those resources as mm-hmm. a younger child. I think some of the ways that it's presented in coding has been a little bit gendered, and I think if it had been a little bit more for anybody or just things that different kinds of people are interested in, I think I would have and been more interested in those resources.
Yeah, that's very true. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and hand it off to Natalie now.
Okay, so I had a quote from a different TED Talk by Jim Sevier, and he said, "I find it interesting that with record levels of technology consumption, the gap separating us digitally from one another continues to grow at an alarming rate." So I wanted to see what you guys thought about the fact that like how technology expansion continues the digital divide, and even though it's like advancing one part of the world and advancing society, it's also just kind of leaving others behind and possibly causing more problems.
Yeah, I think it makes it harder to catch up when you think about it like that, because like everybody's advancing, so then you have to work double time if you're coming from, like, if you're in second place and the first place person's still running, you still got to catch up to that person to win. But if they're already a mile ahead of you, it kind of becomes disheartening to try to get up there.
Yeah, I think that perhaps since the iPhone was introduced, I think that the rate of technology in terms of, like, hardware capabilities has been slowing down a little bit. I mean, there have been advances in artificial intelligence, but maybe not nearly as quickly as some experts thought. But even though that may be something like the hardware or the tools that we're using haven't changed as much, I think the internet culture has certainly changed with the arrival of social media. And so though even if there may be Moore's Law is more or less dead, I still think that there is ways that it's still moving forward pretty rapidly.
Yeah, that's true. Like, thinking about it, like when I tried to think of like the last like big technology device, I think of it would have to be the iPhone, because every other device that like Apple or these companies have made have been just versions of the iPhone. Like the iPad's just a giant iPhone.
The Apple Watch is a little iPhone.
So, and then the rest of the products have just been like improving on that. Or with computers, they're basically adding iPhone features to your computers. So, yeah, I would have to agree with that. And I guess, like, since we're more focusing on, like when you think of, like, the latest, like, big, like, what's going on in technology now, you think of, yeah, social media and streaming services. Like, that seems to be, like, where everyone's attention has kind of shifted.
Yeah, and things like streaming services now, that's more money that could be used for something else that's not just for pure entertainment.
We saw that movement a couple of years ago with the cutting the cable and it going down to fewer streaming services, but as different companies are pulling the rights to shows, we're seeing it
more
expand
and more
back out again. So that's kind of the divide there is growing again.
Yeah, and this same TED Talk, he was talking about how 50% of the world doesn't have access to internet, so it's cutting off half the world to information about education, health, entertainment that, like, streaming services provide. So it's only giving, like, half the population the human experience, basically.
How are we doing on time?
We could talk a little bit more. We could afford that.
We could afford that. I think something interesting that I know we've thought about before as a group has been about ageism in the digital divide, if that's something we wanted to talk about again.
Yeah, one thing that I found interesting, just speaking of that, is I know, like, most people my age, I'm 19, everyone that I know, like, got phones, like, around, like, high school, like, maybe late middle school, but my 9-year-old cousin just got a phone. And I don't know, and I'm just curious, like, do you guys think, like, she's, like, emotionally ready to handle it? Because, like, it doesn't seem like a lot, but, like, handling, like, social media and, like, texting and, like, all that, it is a lot on you.
I feel like it's the healthiest thing, but it could also be beneficial to, like, learn to regulate yourself earlier. Like, I think we talked about how our parents or, like, my grandparents use Facebook way too much, but, like, it's so new to them that, like, they don't know how to regulate it. It's just something that they want to experience, like, really quickly. So, it could be beneficial to learn how to handle it at an earlier age.
I think also with people who are a little bit older and are in a different generation, I think we see that some of us might have grandparents that, you know, are using Facebook, are maybe sending us little funny texts throughout the day. And we also have grandparents I know that don't have any internet access or don't have any kind of, they just have like a house phone. And so I think that really affects how they're able to interact with society, what's currently going on in the world. I didn't know if y'all had any thoughts about that.
What do you mean by that? Like, can you repeat that question?
Yeah, no, that's fair. Do you think that the fact that some people of older generations may not have as much digital literacy or technology affects how they experience society in a negative way or a positive way?
I think, like, they kind of, I mean, I feel like this is, like, the old typical saying, but it was a different generation. I feel like, while, yeah, they're in the new one now, that's just how they were brought up, that's where their brains developed, so that's where their minds are at. And while, like, yeah, some like to join in because, like, being part of society, like, a lot of people like that. Like, I know my grandparents are, like, completely opposite. My dad's parents, like, completely stay away from technology. Have like the only thing that they ever had is a flip phone. I don't even know. I think they have like a really old computer. But then my other grandfather on my mom's side, he has like a MacBook. He has an iPhone. Can he use them? Not really. But like he still like likes to be a part of it. He sends me really ridiculous things on Facebook that make no sense. But you know, it's very wholesome. So it's okay.
What kind of stuff does your grandfather send you on Facebook?
On my Facebook wall the other day, for example, he just wrote, "Hi, Emma, I just left you a voicemail." And he put it on public, so the entire world saw it.
Oh my gosh, that's really funny. All right, is there anything else that we wanted to talk about, or are we ready to wrap up?
We can wrap up.
All right, it sounds good. Thank you all for listening.